Hello to everybody who loved the X-Men growing up and loves them even more now. It's Beautiful Anonymous. 1 hour, one phone call, no names, no holds barred.
I'd rather go one-on-one. I think it'll be more fun, and I'll get to know you, and you'll get to know me.
Hi, everybody. Chris Gethard here. And I know some people don't want a long intro. If you don't, I'll just let you know. You can check out BeautifulAnonymous.com to learn more about our new platform, Beautiful Anonymous Plus. I'd love it if you checked it out. In the meantime, if you want to skip the intro, I think it's about 15 minutes. I should have started a clock. We talk about a few cool things, but if you jump about like 14 minutes, 15 minutes, I think you'll be through most of it. And hey, I'm not mad at you. Enjoy the phone call. Hi, everybody. Chris Gethard here. As always, it is an honor to welcome you to Beautiful Anonymous, a show where I, a comedian who is less and less notable as a comedian with each passing year, as I get older and let go of my ego, talks to humans on the phone and helps get their stories out there in the world. And hopefully, on our best days, what happens is you get to listen to these conversations, feel like you are a fly on the wall as humanity unfolds. And we don't edit these, and we don't overproduce these, and we don't even think too hard about them. We try to just make them real, raw, honest, human conversations that unfold for an hour at a time, which in a world of an increasingly short attention span feels crazy. But I think there's so many of us out there who go, TikTok's fun for a little while, but man, can you waste time on it? And tweets are only a handful of characters at a time, and they can get people so mad. What happens if we actually go 60 minutes at a time? It feels so old school in a way, but it's also, I think, pretty healthy. It might make you feel a little in touch with your own humanity. On our best days, I think that that's true. And what do I want to say? Just a few things. The first thing is this. This just comes from my gut, and it comes from my heart. We are in the holiday season. I'm recording all these ads right now, and so many of them are holiday-themed, and the promo codes have holiday written right into them, all this stuff. And it's just a reminder to me, take it easy on yourself. The holidays are rough for so many reasons, right? It's darker than it was a few months ago. We switched the clocks to make it darker just as it gets colder, which is not the best combination emotionally. And then on top of it, there's all sorts of family issues we have to think about. And then on top of that, we come up on the new year. Like, we are going to be recording our New Year's resolution special soon. And that's all this time for self-evaluation. And self-evaluation often turns into self-judgment. And when it gets really dark, self-critique, self-hate. So I just want to put it out there. Please take it easy on yourself this December and January. When you're in your house more than you're used to because it's cold, and then we train ourselves to also go, how did the last year go and how can I improve for the next year? Let's by all means set some goals. And I put this out there for me as much as anybody else, but also take it easy on yourself. I volunteer and I drive for an ambulance service in New Jersey. My town has a volunteer ambulance squad. I drive for it. And I will tell you, it's my second year doing it. And I realized last year, the idea that mental health stuff flares up around the holidays, it's very, very real. It was really striking. I live in a tiny town. It's only a few thousand people. And you saw an increase because I have an app where every call in town comes through the app. So even if you're not on duty, you can see the calls coming in and what they're about. And that way we can all help each other on the first aid squad. And if anybody needs coverage or if you need to scramble a second crew, everybody's aware of what's going on. So you see all the calls. And I remember last year after Thanksgiving, right up through the end of the year, realizing it's not a joke. You start to see an uptick in mental health stuff, even in a town as small as mine. So please, take care of yourself and take it easy on yourself. And one of the big things I want to put out there, and one of the big things that's become, I would say, for a show that's predicated on randomness and seeing what comes at us, there are a number of themes that have emerged over the years. And I would argue that these are themes only in the sense that these are things that are on people's minds. You can see, if you go and listen to calls from 2016, 17, there's some things that were coming up a lot then that aren't coming up now, or that were coming up in a way that's very different than they are now, all these years later, because the conversations are evolving as people learn and people in some ways wrangle their opinions on things. In other ways, you know, we start getting fed other things to be passionate about or even mad about by social media and traditional media, blah, blah, blah. We all know how it goes. But one of the themes that's been from the very first episode and that constantly comes up is people trying to figure out how to not feel like a failure. We've heard that on this show from day one, that there's people in jobs that they don't like and they feel like they failed because they're working those jobs. There's people who have taken big swings and missed and they're beating themselves up. There's people who have artistic dreams and they can't figure out how to get over the finish line. And I will tell you, I've found myself over and over again throughout the years reminding people that failure and success feel absolute, but they are relative. They feel objective, they are subjective. Now, obviously, there's people who start businesses and put tons of money into them, and then if the businesses don't get off the ground, there is certainly a number of value that they can look and say, oh my goodness, I sunk cost into it. It's hard to take a deep breath in those moments, obviously. But there are also people who make art and feel like, how come no one pays it? How come no one's listening to my songs? How come no one's watching my videos? How come I can't get this thing that is a side gig to become my main gig when I've been working it so hard? I hear you and I feel you. I am someone who has had some things in my life met with a lot of success, and then some things that to me I go, man, this feels like an idea that's just as good as the ones that were successful. And I know more now about how to execute an idea, and it was just a whiff. Some ideas that I've tried to put out there after I was quote unquote a known quantity that went so poorly that it shocked me and shook me up. I've had that experience as a relatively successful artist. And the main lesson that I learned over and over again is take a breath. Do not beat yourself up. Please, this holiday season, take it easy on yourself. Remember that failure is also fertilizer. Fertilizer makes the next idea grow. I know that sounds like a cheesy old platitude, and it probably is, but there is so much truth to it. So much truth to it. Because I can tell you, there were ideas that I had people in my life tell me, this one's a sure thing. And they went so poorly that I was embarrassed. And then the very podcast that you're listening to, that many of you have been listening to for over 7 years now, which has been the most consistent success I've ever been met with, was an idea that so many people in my life, well, I pitched this idea around, and what did people say? Phone calls for an hour? No thanks, buddy. And even I was like, I think there's something here. There could be. What's the harm in trying? And 7 years later, it worked out. Point being, all you got to do is stay true to yourself, make things you believe in, make choices that you're willing to own, and avoid that world of self-questioning and regret. And some of it in a lot of parts of the world right now is as simple as this. Don't you ever make any decisions about who you are at your core during a time of year where the sun goes down at 4:30 p.m. and it's 28 degrees outside and you can't go take a walk. At the very least, hold off until the spring before you decide you're a failure. Please. It's too easy to decide that you're a failure when it's dark at 4:45 p.m. and you can't step outside without shivering. Okay? At the very least, wait until it's warm enough that you can take a walk around the block and clear your head. Give yourself an honest chance at that. Are these things easier said than done? Of course. Am I sitting here thinking about people right now in the exact situation I'm talking about? The people who know that this time of year, if you're somebody who's maybe prone to some low-level anxiety or self-questioning that this is the time of year when maybe circumstances help them become high-level. I'm out here. I'm thinking of you. I am one of you. And this message is as much for me as anyone else. Even, and I'll slip a plug in. I know what I'm doing right here. I don't think this changes the integrity of the message. Beautiful Anonymous Plus. We launched it a few weeks ago at beautifulanonymous.com. It's our bonus content. Had so many people for years coming up telling me, when are you gonna start something where we can pay you a little bit? I've been listening for years. We're a couple weeks in. This podcast has over 50,000 listeners a week still. Many weeks, it's much larger than that. And as I'm recording this, we have just over 300 signups. Numbers-wise, is that a success? Well, it certainly hasn't lit the world on fire. But am I going to sit here in December when it's going to be dark in a few hours and it's freezing cold and I don't want to step outside and call myself a failure? Not quite yet. Not quite yet. I'll keep figuring out how to tinker with it. I'll keep figuring out how to explain Beautiful Anonymous Plus to you in a way that maybe gets you excited. And I will enjoy the gleeful challenge of trying to make it so undeniable that word spreads that it's cool and it's worth your time and money. And that's a challenge for me right now. I could sit here and say, we only got 300 signups and change. And by the way, I love that now that we're independent, I can just say that. I can just be vulnerable with you all and tell you that. Because I think in the past, there might have been some strategy meetings on how do we change that. Here's how we change it. Let's not care if it changes. If it's only 300 and something people and they enjoy the hell out of it, let's play ball and let's go. Okay, but I can be vulnerable and let you know that number and let you know that on some days it makes me feel insecure, but I'm not going to view it as a failure yet. Not this time of year when we all just hang our entire self of our families and our own self-worth on the holidays just to get through it, right? I'm not doing it just yet. Anyway, good example in my life right there. My most successful project has this new satellite division called Beautiful Anonymous Plus that's not exactly setting the world on fire. It's making me a little insecure? Sure. Am I going to keep pushing? Yeah, why not? It's fun. Am I lucky to be able to say that? Yes. And do I hope that whatever you're out there struggling with, you push through it as well? Absolutely. You know I do. You know I do. Much love to everybody. Let's keep the heads up. Take a breath. Nobody make any decisions about who you are and what things mean until you can take a walk around the block. I think that that's a good policy in life in general. Okay, this week's episode, I am so excited for you to hear. I'm so excited for you to hear. On a basic level, look, there's a lot of talk of religion. There is a part that's maybe a little tense. I think I made the caller a little tense because I straight up brought up animal sacrifice. I know that might be a sensitive topic for some people. There's been people with opinions on that over at the Facebook group, Beautiful Anonymous, the community. Our caller practices Santeria, which I think a lot of people have heard of. I don't know how many people are intimately aware of it. That's one of my favorite types of calls when I go, I've heard about this. You're in it. Tell me the real deal. Here's the rumors I've heard. Tell me the truth. How did you come to find this? Does your background fit the traditional background of people who do find it? There's a lot of really fascinating talk, I will say. There's a lot of talk about Santeria as a practice. There's also a lot of talk about how people might find a religion like Santeria when they come from a group that's already marginalized. There's a lot of talk that I found really fascinating about how religions that are mainstream spread and then they bounce off smaller local regional customs and religions and folk pathways and how those things integrate and merge and come to cross over and blend into each other in a way that's really fascinating. The relationship between Santeria and Catholicism is talked about a lot here in a way that's really cool. And it's not a textbook. It's someone who's lived it and seen it. Our caller comes from an evangelical background. So you can imagine. It's a really fun call about a topic that's super specific. And then one thing that I love so much, again, I'll plug it again. You all, I'm not going to deny the fact that I'm plugging it, but for anybody who is signed up at Beautiful Anonymous Plus, I think you're all picking up on every episode you get is longer and contains 5 questions. And one thing that I love is that the 5 questions are random. They're submitted by people in the Facebook group, and we use a random number generator. So we get this whole beautiful call about Santeria, and then we get this follow-up that's an extra half hour that's just 5 random questions about anything else. And I mean, we talk about reality shows in the 5 questions. What's the best advice the caller's ever heard? The worst thing the caller ever did as a kid and got away with. It's a really, those are just 3. I'm not going to give them away, all of them. The surprise is nice, but for the people enjoying Beautiful Anonymous Plus so far, I think you'd agree this type of call where we go, let's focus specifically on one thing in the main call and then use Beautiful Anonymous Plus as a way to go. And who else are you beyond that? And let's take 5 totally random tangents along the way. So fun, so lovely, so happy I get to do it. Anyway, thanks so much, everybody, for listening. Enjoy the call. Take care of yourselves. Don't beat yourselves up in the winter. Just don't do it, okay? It's all very real. Failure is subjective. We get to tell you when we fail. You don't get to tell us. Who's that person out there? That person's in our head. That's us. Let's turn off that critical voice for a few weeks and just take a breath. Anyway, you guys get it. Enjoy the call. Thanks so much.
Thank you for calling Beautiful Anonymous. A beeping noise will indicate when you are on the show with the host.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you great.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, doing pretty good. I'm currently on duty. Technically, I'm on a shift driving for an ambulance. I'm a volunteer ambulance driver in New Jersey, and I'm on a shift, but I have somebody covering me for the length of our call.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. I don't know if anybody's ever told you this, but it's kind of weird. I'm so used to hearing you as a podcaster, so it feels sort of like the radio is talking back to me.
Now we're in it. Now we're just in it.
Yeah.
Hardcore.
You're a real person.
turns out I'm a breathing, living, functioning human being. I just ate some pretzels. I had some water and I don't know where it went. And man, does that bum me out. Anyway, yeah, I'm just doing regular human stuff as one does.
I am too. You're distracting me from homework day because it's finals week. And I'm happy to have the distraction because I didn't really want to be doing what I was doing anyway.
Okay. When you say finals, is this college, grad school, high school? What level are we at?
I'm in grad school to be an archivist.
An archivist?
It's my first month or my first semester, sorry.
What the heck does an archivist do? I think it's associated with librarians in my mind, right?
Yeah. You can work in a museum or a library. I'm going to do like musical collections and try to like get involved in some sort of digital archiving. Yeah, that's new. I just started it.
That's the future.
Yeah, I guess it is.
Is there a specific type of music you're interested in archiving? I have no idea if this is what you wanted to talk about, but I'm fascinated by it.
It's not, but we can segue in. I'm pretty good at it. I'm a Gemini. I can command a conversation if I need to. But
I'm a Gemini on the Taurus cusp. That's where I'm at.
You are a Taurus cusp. I just looked at your astrological chart.
Oh, did you now?
For some reason is on my phone. Yeah, it's on my phone from a different
My
call
astrological chart is on your phone?
If I remember right, yeah.
Wow. Okay, I'll just choose to be
if
okay
I have
with
it
that.
Right. If I have it right, 6:17 a.m., right?
Do you even have the time I was born?
I think you gave somebody your chart one. I listened a lot. I listened a lot last year.
Whoa.
I think it, yeah, but I do a lot of astrology and stuff. Mm-hmm. Oh, but anyway, the kind of music that I want to archive is like everything from traveling punk music to MySpace era music to, I'll just get that out of the way. Musical stuff.
I love that.
What's the other stuff? I don't know. I was like really in the indie scene for a while, just as a consumer. And so a lot of music got lost in the MySpace era and online. And I started not being able to find music online. So I was like, I don't have enough money to go on Discogs and buy random CDs from Sweden and Italy that somebody kept. So I'm going to try to find somebody to fund it. Mm-hmm. And that began a journey. But I was also, I'll segue now, because I feel like we're going to talk about it eventually, and then you're going to have a bunch of questions. So I was told to look into tech by reading. So I'm involved in this Afro-Caribbean religion called Lukumi. It's commonly referred to as Santeria. And I got told in divination that I should look into tech. And so, but I was also told that I have to look for jobs that I'm passionate about.
Hold on.
So I did some soul searching.
Wait, you said you're saying tech? Like you were told to look into tech, tech meaning like Silicon Valley, like apps, tech.
Like technology, yeah.
And how does that relate?
Yeah.
But the religion you practice is Santeria? I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh at anyone's religion. I'm just sorting out how those two things go together.
So we do, everything we do is like based off of divination. And so I got this big life reading and they were like, you should look into technology. You would do really well there. But then they were like, you have to be really passionate. So I took some, like, I was like looking into coding and I was like, I'm not passionate about this at all. And then I remembered information science is technically technology, which led me here because I'm really passionate about music.
You're burying the lead. You're burying the lead in some way. I mean, you know my first question here.
What is it?
Well, you're just saying that you practice Santeria and that in part of a Santeria divination, you were told to look into tech. If I said, oh, how'd you decide to go into music archiving? And you go, oh, well, I was participating in a Santeria ceremony. Whereas I think it's fair to say, and I'm not one to judge anybody's religion, I think it's fair to say Santeria is a largely hidden religion and one that's kind of whispered about in the shadows traditionally.
It is.
So you're just kind of casually dropping something here as if I'm not going to jump all over that. I need to hear more about that to start.
I mean, yeah, the call I figured would be about the last year of my life, which includes a lot of stuff about that. So I figured, I mean, that's why I'm in school. So I didn't mean to bury the lead. That's just how it came up. Because I'm doing homework right now. I'm not doing Santeria right now.
Okay.
So let's see. I do have to be careful. I should, like, my disclaimer for the world is, like, really, like, elder priests should be talking about the tradition in, like, a more formal way. So, like, I am not that. I'm a very novitiate priest, which I am a priest. So, technically, I have a little more clout than, like, somebody who stumbled into it yesterday. But
you're a Santerian priest?
Yeah, new, a baby. So
you're a novice
it's not my
priest
job to like,
in Santeria.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can talk about my experience, but my job isn't to declare that anything I say about the religion is true. I'm still learning myself.
You're not a spokesperson.
Very acculturation.
You're not a spokesperson. You're talking about your path.
Yeah.
In this. Great. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So if any, I have to say, that's like very, very, that's like a cultural taboo. Like, just take everything, you should take everything anybody says about it with a grain of salt because everybody, you know, everybody has their own, it's an oral tradition. So everybody has different points of access and everybody has different knowledge and everybody has misunderstandings too. It only exists as a collective set of knowledge. So like I could be misinformed about something and somebody, there could be, and it's a living tradition. So there are disagreements about stuff. So I'm not going to focus on like brass tacks really. But my experience is that, yeah, I went through a ceremony, a 7-day ceremony that is secretive in nature. And then I spent a year wearing all white and I didn't touch anyone. And it just so happens that a bunch of stuff happened during that year that really transformed my life. And maybe that's because I initiated as a Sangria priest, if you want to believe that. But so it's been a really long year. And then in August, I finished my year in white, which is what people do. That's a pretty public. You can Google that, like year in white. So I'm not like spilling anything crazy. But
okay, I'm going.
Yeah, there's like a bunch of rules. There's a bunch of rules I adhere to, and yeah. I need to know, are you sitting in an ambulance right now, or are you just
no,
like...
No. I'm at my house. If the pager was off, I would have to run out of my house and get to the firehouse to drive the ambulance, but I've turned the pager off because my buddy Jason is covering me until we are done, until you and I are done talking about the year in white that led to you becoming a novice priest in the... largely regarded as underground religion of Santeria, although I'm sure you have opinions on that.
Yeah. I studied it academically for a while. Like I almost went into school for that. So I have a lot of, I'm very comfortable talking about it as like a cultural institution from like as an also a novice anthropologist, but yeah, I'm comfortable talking about it in that way. So I might seem a little, That's more me as a budding academic or just an academic. But yeah, so it's fascinating. It's fascinating for multiple levels, not just because it's full of, you know, really exciting deities. And we also don't proselytize. So this isn't any sort of spokes. We don't do that. We actually don't allow people in unless divination determines that they're allowed in. So plenty of people get turned away.
And can I ask what your background is? Because Santeria, my understanding, Santeria is mostly associated with Cuba, I believe.
It is, and more Latinos have gotten involved, and like other types of Latinos, and then a lot of African Americans have gotten involved. So there's it's confusing because it's a black religion and it's an African religion. And in Cuba, a lot of black people practiced it. And then they went through their own process of mestizaje, a mixing. They went through their own process of choosing to allow different types of people to get involved of different colors in Cuba. And then Cubans brought it over here. But the Cubans that made it over here are largely white. So there's like still racialized stuff between Cubans. Anyway, and then now we're through this whole second wave of like Americans getting involved, and those Americans are of a bunch of different origins. To the extent that there are a lot of white people involved with this, like white Americans, but that's a newer phenomenon. And I'm like mixed race, Latino and white, and so that is like, you know, I kind of entered it from multiple angles, kind of as a white person, as an American, but also like, oh, cool, this is a religion that like has a place for me. There are people who look like me that practice this.
This is fascinating.
But I'm neither African nor Cuban. So, yeah.
And I would have to imagine that in speaking of being in the United States, I'm just going on instinct here. I'd imagine Southern Florida is probably the strongest foothold of Santeria, but is it spreading to other areas as well?
It is, although New York is like, there's people who could argue that New York is the center of the tradition at this point.
The center, but even more than the island of Cuba itself, or the center in America?
There are arguments on all. I don't know. It depends. I can't say that. There's just a lot of people in New York. But there's also a lot of I've been to Miami. Like, Miami and New York are closely linked. So, it's like everybody in Miami, like, talks about being in New York, and everybody in New York, you know, not everybody in New York, but there might be practitioners who are kind of in both, Miami and New York, regularly. But yeah, there's definitely like important information in Cuba. There's older priests in Cuba. There's a center of information in Cuba. There are a lot of people in New York that are involved. So
I love that we get to talk about this. I love that we get to talk about it. Is there a place you want to start, or can I just start throwing questions at you?
You can throw some questions. I'm glad. I was ambivalent about talking about it at first, but also, because again, I don't want to be a spokesperson, but also I remembered that there was somebody who came on and she was like not very happy about it. I think she's from New Jersey too. And she was like not happy about Santeria, which we do call Lukumi. Santeria was originally a slur, but people use both terms. So I don't take offense to Santeria, but some people wouldn't like us calling it Santeria. There was somebody here. I think there was a caller once who like kind of badmouthed it or didn't like it. So
I'm happy to dispel. This is ringing a bell. 400 episodes in, I don't have instant total recall, but this is ringing a bell. So
yeah,
how did you discover it, and what made you attracted to it?
I had a strong conviction that I wanted to practice the religion from before, like, colonization. And I looked into traditions that were closer to my personal ancestry. However, if I couldn't access them very easily, and if I could, they were Reconstructionist. So I really, really wanted to find a religion that I would consider the old religion that had a direct initiatory link. So, like, had an unbroken chain from before colonization until now. And Lukumi and its other, their sister traditions in Brazil and Nigeria, they have among, and since finding it, I realized there are lots of traditions that have that claim. But at the time, that was what I found. And I was always like a spiritual seeker. So I would like hang out with witches and whatever, and like, or people who claim to be that. And so somebody like mentioned it to me.
Hold on. Again, I just want to say you are very masterful at just casually dropping stuff that most of our listeners, that's when you're just like, I used to hang with witches. You're saying it as in the same way that I would go. I just had to run down to the store because we were out of bread. So I went and picked up some bread and some milk. You're the same exact tone of voice.
I feel like that's part of this podcast. I feel like you're like that too. You're like casually like, oh, I had a mental breakdown. Just a comedy set, whatever.
Every once in a while, yeah. I was on stage in front of 300 people. None of them realized I was actively having a panic attack. I got off stage and immediately had to call a close, trusted friend to come sit with me all night. Yeah, sometimes, right? All of us have our own perspective. So you were hanging out with witches.
With spiritual seekers, yeah.
I'm sure maybe a warlock or two along the way came into this. I'm sure a druid. I'm sure there were other people. And I'm saying this seriously.
I was like, druid, that's silly. But then I was like, oh no, me and the person who originally told me about this religion did in fact go into the woods with some druids and have a ceremony that I think was kind of bullshit, but I don't know. Who knows? So yes, technically I have lived a life in which I have, done that.
So you have actively sought out, there have to be, like, you're someone who clearly, I mean, you're an academic thinker, you're in grad school, you sought this out. It seems like it was a way for you to get in touch with your roots, and I'm not sure if you planned on diving in as deeply as you have, or if you wound up going down a rabbit hole you didn't expect. I'd love to hear about that. But I also want to know, like, in this spiritual seeking that led to Lukumi, Santeria, some call it, did you encounter other, like, are there people out there still worshiping the Norse gods? Like, are there people praying to Thor and Baldur? There are. And you've met all
there
these
are,
people.
There are, yeah. There are. And I think actually once I found my own way, I saw more of the validity in all of the other traditions and religions, including Christianity. I've actually gotten more of a sense of respect and sense of connection to like maybe religions that I grew up in or grew up around that I like didn't have respect for. So I now kind of see it as like everybody has access to the divine and they just are like trying to find a good language to speak to it. But something you said reminded me that like the other, so I think I bumped into Santeria a few times and I was always like this, we all have like some pretty messed up beliefs about like African stuff and like there's just like misinformation, I guess. Like there's Hollywood and there's like, so there's a lot of stuff I saw and I was like, no. And I just remember I would bump into information about it and immediately just be like, that must not be for me. So by the time I did end up coming around to it, I was like very deeply entrenched in like feminism and the concept that like marginalized people have a really good purview of reality instead of growing up thinking like maybe they were misunderstanding things or misinformed or undereducated. I realized like, oh, actually, if somebody was going to hold truth or divinity in plain sight and nobody realized that they had been carrying with them some old way of doing things that was really beautiful that I was looking for, it would be Black women or Indigenous people or enslaved people. Like it kind of made sense all of a sudden, like it clicked. Like my anti-colonial brain sort of was like, oh, there's probably like a lot of truth to these people. Whereas like a younger version of myself probably would have been like, this is backwards or underinformed or I misunderstood it. So I had more of an openness at that point in my life to say like, there's very possibly something here that is like truly elevated. And I believe that's what I found.
Now, you're someone who saw a lot of different religions as you were on this sort of quest. You said when you discovered this one, you respected a lot of them in a way you hadn't anticipated, that maybe retroactively some of the ones that felt performative or a little sillier, you started to go, oh, actually, now that I've locked in with one that works for me, I understand all of those a little bit more, including Christianity. Yeah. I know one of the things about a lot of these religions that have had continuity, as you say, going back before colonization, is the way that they cross over and incorporate Christianity is very interesting. I'm sure you might have some things to say with that. I do want to ask, for anybody listening, because a lot of us have heard the word Santeria, I'll put out here some things that are cliches, maybe even stereotypes, and for any listeners of your faith, could be perhaps damaging or a faux pas or insensitive. And the reason I want to bring them up is because I have you on the line, and I want you to be able to say, well, here's what's patently false. Here's what's somewhat true but misinterpreted. And here's the things that are true. Is that okay?
Sure.
A lot of people equate Santeria with voodoo. I think a lot of people in the United States, at least, grew up and those terms are somewhat interchangeable. My understanding is that voodoo can, you know, voodoo / hoodoo, which is an associated thing, maybe synonymous. I don't actually know if those are synonymous or separate things with, you know, I don't know if that's a language with multiple names. Different cultures produced those. Even our concept of, there are people who practice voodoo. I think Haiti is most associated with it, and that's not what the pop culture version of it is, but Santeria gets tangled up in that. People think of, I hate to be reductionist, you start to think of the character Pedro Serrano from the movie Major League, this guy with rum and doing potions in his locker and praying to these gods, Jobu, and that was one from my childhood of just sort of a cartoonish representation. You start to think of stories of, you know, I know living in New York as long as I did, you would hear stories that there were certain types of shops that presented themselves as, you know, sort of visibly spiritual shops related to Hispanic culture, but that if I was to walk in as a guy who grew up in the suburbs of New Jersey with, you know, my ginger complexion, who's clearly not Hispanic background, there's certain things that I would not be shown in that store. But in New York, you start to hear, oh, some of these stores have back rooms that cater more to people who are locked in with that. And it sounds, it makes it sound a little mysterious, but also I would imagine some protection there. You hear stories about animal sacrifice, which when I grew up was part of the satanic panic, you know, like you're going to get kidnapped all the time. Mm-hmm. People are going to chop off animal heads and kidnap you, which my understanding, like a cursory Google search during this call, is that might be an aspect of the religion, but I'm sure not associated with wearing cloaks and trying to scare and kidnap kids as it was painted back in the satanic panic days. So I wanted to throw some of those things out there as the stereotypes, so you can point out maybe other stereotypes and help me untangle those to let me know which ones are the most patently offensive, which ones have some elements of truth to them and misinterpretation. I'll put the ball in your court. And let's pause there, because I bet that's what a lot of us listening are thinking of. Sort of like, I feel like I heard about this growing up. I think I know what it might be. But let's hear from somebody who actually knows what they're talking about to help sort it out. We'll do that and so much more when we get back. The holidays are here. The holidays are coming around. And guess what? You've got family in your life and friends in your life. And you're probably sitting here going, man, I wish we could celebrate in person. And you're simultaneously trying to think of gifts for those very people. There's something really, really great that I need to tell you about. It's the Aura Frame. I have one. My parents have two. My mother-in-law has one. It's a really incredible thing. I'm going off book here. I love the Aura digital frame. At the end of the day, that's what it is. It's a really nice digital frame. There's one up on my mantle. If you ever come over to my house, which I don't know why many of you would see it right there. The picture quality, very, very high. The frame itself looks good up there on the mantle. It's not, you know, sometimes you hear digital frame and you start to think, is it a well-made product? This one is. Looks great up there on the mantle. And the most important thing about it, it's a really personal way to keep in touch. And really, especially around the holidays, that goes a long way. The way it works is that I have the app. My wife has the app. My dad has the app. My brother has the app. And we can add photos and they go right to the digital frame. So for example, I can upload a photo and I can click that I want it to go to my parents' frame in their house up north and the one in Florida and to my mother-in-law's frame and my own frame, and it loads it onto all those frames, and then that's in the rotation of pictures that those people get to see. And everybody who has the app and has access to my frames can be doing it, and you build this sort of living archive of photos that you set how often it cycles through them. And my parents love theirs. They tell me that they will sometimes turn off the TV and just watch the Aura frame to see what picture comes up next of their grandkids. And it's super fun. It's become a tradition. It's become a big piece of, you know, we've had them pretty much since Cal was born. And it's become a really, really big piece of how we all stay connected and how my parents learn what's going on with their grandkids. How cool is that? And the frames are, like I said, really well designed, not just with the look. They also have unlimited storage, so you don't have to worry about that. This means you and your family and your friends, you can upload all the pics you want, okay? Even the ones that are not good for Instagram. Or maybe you're like me and you're a little protective of putting family photos up on Instagram. Well, this is a great private version of the same idea that you all get to share in together. You can react to the photos with comments and emojis. And you can make this holiday as good as any other holiday, even for the people who don't live in the same state as you anymore. You can recapture that old school vibe. Go ahead and visit AuraFrames.com today. Get $30 off their best-selling frames with the code BEAUTIFUL. These frames sell out quickly, though, so get yours before they are gone. That's AuraFrames.com. The promo code is BEAUTIFUL. Terms and conditions apply. honestly, you are going to love it. Cold turkey. What's cold turkey good for? It's great after Thanksgiving when you're making sandwiches. And that's about it. That's about it. Okay, when it comes to breaking bad habits, it's a phrase that gets tossed around a lot. But maybe it's not the best way, okay? Happy to tell you about our sponsor, Fume. They look at problems in a different way. Not every aspect of a bad habit is wrong. So instead of a drastic, uncomfortable change, maybe we just need to remove the bad parts from the bad habit. Fume is an innovative, award-winning flavored air device that does just that. So instead of vapor, Fume uses flavored air. Okay, a lot of people might look at vapor as a bad habit. Well, they use flavored air with Fume. Instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. Instead of harmful chemicals, Fume has a lot of delicious flavors. So you can see where I'm going with this. There's aspects of these habits that are not necessarily the harmful parts. You still get to retain those. That might help you break the bad habits in a way that's a little more organic, a little bit less stressful physically and emotionally and mentally. Okay, you get it. Instead of bad, Fume is good. It's simple as that. It's a habit you are free to enjoy, and it makes replacing the bad habit easy. Your Fume comes with an adjustable airflow dial. It's designed with movable parts and magnets. That's specifically so you can fidget with it, so you can have your fingers doing a lot, which is helpful for de-stressing and anxiety, and also is another aspect of the habit that's not bad. To maybe have something that's that physical tactile side of things that you like, you get to retain that. Okay, the taste, it's no joke. It's really good. Think of it like it's almost like an herbal tea type sensation, whereas vapors can feel real chemically and sticky, almost like sodas. Fume flavors are a lot more like an herbal tea, a little less sweet, a lot more natural, and you can feel that. As I mentioned, the weight, the feel of the thing in your hand, you still get to have those tactile sensations as you're phasing the bad out of your habits. You could try right now, try the new Solano Fume. It's made with a premium walnut barrel and an onyx-coated mouthpiece, has a slightly softer finish. Start the holidays off right with the good habit by going to tryfume.com/beautiful and getting the journey pack today. Fume is giving listeners of the show 10% off when they use the code beautiful to help make starting the good habit that much easier. Start the good habit at tryfume.com/beautiful to save 10% off the journey pack today. Thanks to the advertisers who help us bring this show to the world. Now let's get back to the phone call. I wanted to throw some of those things out there as the stereotypes so you can point out maybe other stereotypes and help me untangle those to let me know which ones are the most patently offensive, which ones have some elements of truth to them and misinterpretation. I'll put the ball in your court.
Sure, yeah. I will like pretty proudly say to people, like, it's a cousin tradition of voodoo, a distant cousin. It's an argument. It's really funny. Inside of our traditions, we sort of claim to be very different, but I think it's like really obvious if you step outside of it for like 2 seconds, but they are very alike. I mean, it's literally the two cultures that formed those religions have lived right next to each other in Africa for millennia, and then ended up people were enslaved, and those traditions then were both molded by Catholicism, French Catholicism, and Spanish Catholicism in islands that are also right next to each other. So it would be silly to say, like, to us, it's sort of like comparing Christianity to maybe another Abrahamic faith like Judaism or Islam. Like, we see the differences, but probably from the outside, people don't see as many differences. So, you know, there's crossover, but I try not to, again, this is like where I like don't want to be too like the representative, but right, I will right. just say that, especially as an academic or as somebody who, no, my experience has been, and how do I actually want to say this? I want to say that it's important for me to remember now that I've actually experienced all of the rituals, that it would not be unusual for somebody even 100 years ago. My own grandmother has slaughtered a chicken to make food. And a lot of our rituals and rituals that I've seen in other traditions have to do with food and have to do with dance and song and slowing down. You know, there's secular singing and there's religious singing. There's secular music and dance. But then there's religious music and dance. There's secular cooking and there's religious cooking for us. And so we're really just slowing down a process that 99.99% of the time it has ever happened has included the slaughter of an animal. But it's only recently that's not a part of it. So if I were to say, like, I slowed down the process of, like, cutting up meat and cooking it in a sensual way that included ingredients that reminded me of a deity or of a god and offered it up to that god in order to try to invite that god to eat dinner with me. And lots of traditions practice the, like, give fruit or different offerings to different entities. And again, I think also animal sacrifice gets thrown. I think anti-African sentiment makes it really obvious that animal sacrifice happens there, whereas it's happening in Hinduism. It's happening by certain branches of Judaism. Or at least folk traditions.
Let's not also forget too, for anybody out there who might be very Christian, who has a very wary eye towards what you're describing, while you're talking about animals being prepared and slaughtered in tribute to gods, and a lot of us might view that as sacrifice, all of Christianity, I believe almost every denomination, if not everyone, has a whole ceremony about, now you're going to eat a guy's body, you're going to drink his blood. And even if it's a wafer and wine, it's still, when you take a step back, like, it's, I'm not going to say that all religions are, how do I want to put it? Like, all religions have benefits, all religions have concerns, and it's very subjective as to what people choose to be concerned by. A lot of people who listen to this podcast know that I'm not religious because I was raised Catholic. And I have a lot of real major concerns about the church. I don't need to list them here, but it's easy for the standard bearers who, you know, Christianity kind of rules the roost in this country way more than it should politically, culturally. It's easy to cast a judgmental eye. Every Sunday, you have a ceremony about drinking blood and eating a human body. Now, you're not really eating a human body, but you have a whole ceremony about it. So let's not judge too hard.
Yeah. And theoretically, that was to satiate a god that did demand sacrifice beforehand. It's not that that just happens to be similar to sacrifice. It is, in fact, Christian, according to Christian belief, the final sacrifice, of which there were many before, and they were not, they were done biblically, like they were supposed to be done, you know?
Right. Right.
So that God, that specific deity demanded sacrifice up until it didn't, theoretically. But I just think that this tradition slows down a very beautiful process and says, look at what you're doing as a human. Look at how these things are interconnected. Look how, you know, the rain is connected with the water that you drink, and look how all of this is connected to the food that you eat. And, you know, there's a lot of other esoteric symbolism that happens, but that's kind of my view of it, is that it's, if I were to say I put a cup of coffee on a grave for my grandpa to commune with him, it wouldn't be weird, and you just keep scaling it up. And that's kind of what happened, is things just kept getting scaled up by practitioners hundreds or thousands of years ago, until this, like, very elaborate system of offering was produced. So, but yeah, I don't, I had my own issues with it when I got involved, and I just got over them because I had a strong sense that this was for me. And so I felt that it was just sort of a, I don't know, it was a, a sort of meniscus that, or I don't know if that's the right word. It was just a sort of thing that I had to push through and see what would happen if I got to the other side of it, if I experienced it. And then I realized that it was not that deep. And I felt really connected to all of the people who have ever eaten or had any sort of spiritual experience before me.
So, and now you're saying
that's a big part of it is tradition.
You're saying specifically as you entered that, you're speaking specifically of an animal sacrifice ritual. So you've been a part of one. I mean, imagine if you've trained as a priest, yeah. You at least need to understand how they work and what the symbology behind it all is and how to execute, not execute the animal. I don't mean a pun there. If you were studying to be a priest, you need to at least understand how to do this ceremony for those who might ask you to help guide them through it. So you've done it.
Yeah. And I've witnessed it. I've been a part of it. I've helped, because it's not just that. That is like such a small part of it. So yes, a big part of it is like cooking the food afterwards, and we eat the food, but we also like prepare parts of it. Yeah. So we create a giant elaborate offering that includes fruit and includes cooked food, and we partake in eating that as well. And so all of that is religious to us. And so, yeah, I've taken more so taken a part of that process. So like processing meat, plucking, butchering, but in a way that is slowed down and measured and taken more seriously than maybe if you were just throwing a chicken around the
I have to say too, you start to think about what you're saying there. I'm so sorry to interrupt the tail end, but you know, you grow up, especially like I said, growing up in the 80s and 90s, you start to hear, oh, there's Satanists are kidnapping kids from daycares. And you would hear sometimes, don't go to those woods. There's Santeria happening in there, and they're killing animals. And then to hear you, and I feel like at the end of the day, when you hear like, well, guys, we butcher and eat the food. It's a ceremony, but we eat it. You sit there and you go, oh, they didn't tell us that. We thought it was scary people in robes trying to scare
us. So funny, the robes. I know exactly what you mean, but it's so funny after like 7 or 8 years of being involved to remember the like outside view, which is that there are robes. It's just funny.
There aren't robes. You're saying aren't, like are not.
Yeah, there are not robes. A lot of people will wear all white. And women might wear skirts, or usually would wear skirts. And there's like some amount of like dress code, but there's like, it's mainly regular clothing, and that's only in certain settings. Like there's also times where you might be in a religious function and it's just like, you know, gay guy in a t-shirt swinging around, you know, singing a song or something. But
now you, you've done a really good job of underlining the fact that you're someone who found this religion, identified with it, felt like it spoke to a lot of what you were looking for as far as your cultural connections, and it helped you respect other religions. You dove in. You've now trained as a priest. So you've made it very clear. You're not responsible to speak for the religion as a whole. I am curious, what are your responsibilities as someone who has studied to be a priest in the religion?
That's a good question. So, and it leads into something else that I always feel like I should clarify. I'm learning to have this conversation, because this year has been the first time I've had to talk about it on a regular basis. And I do believe that I believe that I should be authentic. So while I don't necessarily believe that we as a community should put ourselves out, we have any reason to put ourselves out there, I do believe that I'm going to live an authentic life, and so I have to be able to answer these questions. So this is something I do think about in the humblest way I can, and something I've been adding to like the sort of bullet points that I think are important if somebody is asking me about it is, it is my religion, but it's religion, but it's also a healing. to me, it's a healing tradition. So it is a series of rituals that includes chants and herbs, divination, and in the same way that, in a similar way that Native Americans might refer to some of their traditions as medicine, it is truly an indigenous medicine system. So in almost every, in most settings, a lot of the people involved in it might also be involved in what would be considered a mainstream religion. This would just be, it occupies a space between cultural, medicinal, holistic tradition and religion. And it is my religion because I've committed myself to be a practitioner of it. But so that is why I would be studying. I would be studying because at some point, someone somewhere might choose, if they were in a situation like they couldn't get pregnant, or they were having a string of bad luck, or they felt that there was some spiritual malady that they were suffering from, they might reach out to someone and try to figure out what is going on. And I might be a part of that. And then other people might be called to actually be more involved. And I might, at the minimum, attend a ceremony where someone is helping them and be of use.
And you said, just so I'm clear, and I heard that right, you said there's people who will partake who are actively in another religion at the same time. So there might be someone who's a Catholic.
Yeah, and there's people, yes, for sure.
Yeah.
That's very common. And it's very common. I mean, we have clients, and we have practitioners, and we have people that kind of waver between, it's a spectrum.
Right.
And then there are people involved in the religion that are, I'll just say this, we do a lot of divination, and so people are given individual advice, and some people are advised to practice only this, and some people have been advised to practice this and a different tradition. At the very least, to honor the fact that their ancestors practiced a different religion. At the very least, go to Catholic Church because your grandma and your grandpa went to Catholic Church, and how are you supposed to understand? Ancestors are very important to us, and repeating tradition is very important to us. And so, to me, it's like going to Catholic Church is a way for me not to lose some wisdom that might have been passed down to me. If my grandmother only ever spoke to me in one language, if I lose that language, then I lose all the things she said to me. And so like understanding where she might be coming from is like super useful. So like having some involvement with the Catholic Church, even if it's going in and lighting a candle and reading about something, you know, reading a pamphlet or something, is like valuable to me, even though it's not my religion.
It also feels to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, it feels to me like in some ways that idea of almost being like a sub-religion that people can attach to other faiths.
Yeah.
As someone who grew up Catholic, I sit here, I go, some of what you're describing is actually the stuff that's kind of the most fun and cool about being Catholic. Like, we all know, like, there are Catholic priests who are trained to be exorcists, who deal with getting demons out of your body. But we don't talk about that. That's not the forward face of Catholicism. The whole idea of the fact that Catholicism has all these saints, that's one of the coolest parts, because the saints are almost kind of like superheroes. Like, when you're a nerdy kid like me who loves the X-Men, you can kind of spend some of your time in Sunday school being like, oh, wait, well, okay, who was the one who was friends with animals? Who was the one who survived a disembowelment? Like, and it kind of feels to me like not just Santeria, but some of the other religions that input into Catholicism and have a Venn diagram with it sort of say, let's take the unspoken, more hidden, darker parts of Catholicism and make this tie into those, if not super explicitly, at least in practice. Like, it makes sense to me that you would have a lot of Catholic crossover with this if you grew up in families where maybe Catholicism was the religion of the colonizer, and then quietly families kept alive what would be viewed more as folk traditions now. But as you say, that there's continuity and they never stopped. But to see how they intersect and input – It's really fascinating. And I bet it's happening in families all the time in the United States behind closed doors. And most of us in the mainstream don't know because we just don't talk about it.
Yeah, it is. And it's happening in other traditions too. Like you hear about little superstitions that get passed down through families, whether they're Irish or Jewish or Eastern European. And it happens in other religions. Like Buddhism is technically about Buddha, but local deities, bodhisattvas, you know, in Thailand, Burma, they have like gnat worship. There's like these other local folk traditions that regularly get mixed into whatever the mainstream thing is. So there's like sort of a simplified version that anyone can plug into. And then there's these other more folksy ways that you usually have. It's just, there's a very common sort of, there's a pattern. There's a very common framework that kind of gets repeated wherever you go. So and it's not something you really notice or think about that much, but I've spent a lot of time thinking about it, so I notice it more. But yeah, it's very beautiful. I think that's why I kind of like Catholicism. I grew up evangelical. Most of my family was Protestant. And so once I realized like Catholics were hiding folk traditions in plain sight, I mean, the most obvious example to me would be Bridget, like the Saint Bridget. Like we're not even sure if she ever existed as a human. Mm-hmm. So we don't know that she's not just the goddess Bridget or a priestess of the goddess Bridget who converted. That's very possible. Like, but either way, there are these ways that like all of these things plug into each other. And I will say one of those scary stories you talked about going into where like they might not show you certain things. I went into one and I don't really love those stories. Some of those stories can be a little hackney or I don't know if that's the right word, but
if I remember,
they can be kind of
in New York. They're often called botanicas. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. So I went into a botanica in Chicago and I don't know if I trust or I don't know anything about this botanica, but I went into it once. And there was a nun leaving, and the woman at the store said, "You saw that right. She brings us holy water, but she believes in all of this, so she comes and gets readings." And she was a nun in nun garb walking into a botanica. And I don't know if the woman in the back was any good, you know, and she might have been a medium. She might not have been super involved in our tradition, you know, and mediumship has much more crossover with Catholicism. There's like much more of a framework there, but and that's something I would talk about. But yeah, I don't know what that nun was doing, but hearsay is, you know, that there are people who believe in this stuff and are plugging into this stuff in a lot of different ways. So it's very interesting. Everybody's different.
Let's pause here because this is where it's getting really cool. This is where it starts to become the type of thing I get really nerdy about, which is that how do all these different cultures blend? How do they bounce off each other? How do they intersect? How do they reject each other? How do they accept each other? How can individual people build their belief system off of those swirling currents, so to speak? I kind of crapped out at the end of that sentence. Anyway, we've got some ads. We'll be right back. I'm a big fan of Wondery, and I'm so happy that Wondery has been reaching out and building this pipeline of information about their shows living on our show. It's a really great thing. And right now, Wondery is teaming up with none other than Dr. Seuss from Wondery and Dr. Seuss. And coming to you live from the top of Mount Crumpet, it's Tis the Grinch Holiday Talk Show, which is hosted by Saturday Night Live's James Austin Johnson as the famous curmudgeon the Grinch. And I'm just going to go off book right now and tell you something about this. I have met James Austin Johnson through the comedy world only a couple times. I did a show with him. Looking back on it, it was after he had auditioned for SNL and he was still hanging around New York doing shows, waiting to hear what was going to happen. And you instantly got the sense. Instantly, I was like, oh, this dude is a nice guy. This is a nice guy who deserves these opportunities. So support JAJ. I don't know him that well. And if he ever hears this, I hope he is flattered. But my instant impression, this dude's nice. I liked him a lot. The Grinch, of course, is the grand poobah of Bah Humbug, a man who looks at the oncoming Christmas season with a sneer and a snarl. Listen every week as the Grinch goads hilarious celebrity guests as they try to get the Grinch to turn his sour, grinchy frown upside down. Will they succeed, or will he roast them like chestnuts on an open fire and make the who's who of Hollywood cry boo-hoo? That was a mouthful to say, and I enjoyed saying it. Follow Tis the Grinch Holiday Talk Show on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Tis the Grinch Holiday Talk Show early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. Okay, before we even get into the talking points, before I even look at the script, I'm going to let you know that should you ever meet me from this point moving forward, I will smell like cheeky maiden soap. I will smell like a cheeky maiden. And I'm proud of that because this product's awesome. And the fact that they're advertising on the show is great because I believe in it. And everything I've tried from them rules. And that's coming from me. And you guys know I don't mess around about saying things like that. Cheeky Maiden is natural soaps. Not just soaps, but that's the first thing we're going to talk about. Natural soaps are made with organic ingredients. We're talking about plant oils, essential oils, herbs. That means you're avoiding synthetic chemicals. You're avoiding a lot of the potential irritants found in industrial soaps. It's gentle on the skin. It's milder. I'm going to tell you right away, these soaps smell good. They feel good. And you know, we all know there are situations where you enter them and you go, this soap is leveled up. Maybe you get soap as a gift or you stay at a hotel that has some fancy soap and you go, this is a level up from what I'm used to. Cheeky Maiden is that in a big way. Cheeky Maiden has moisturizing properties because natural soaps do. There's nourishing ingredients in there. They hydrate your skin. Let's also think a lot about the environmental impact, okay? A lot of people who listen to the show know that my wife is very, very passionate about the environment, and she's been teaching me a lot over the years, and Cheeky Maiden's right on the same page. Natural soaps are usually biodegradable. They're eco-friendly. They don't contain harmful chemicals because you got to think about this. When you take a shower, whatever you put down your drain, that's showing up in the sewage system in your town. That's going to the nearest waterways. So whatever you can do to make that more natural and less chemically is going to be a really positive thing. There's a huge variety of scents. These essential oils have all different fragrances. And I'm telling you, I'm using Cheeky Maiden soap and beard oil and lip balm. There's all kinds of great stuff. They have lotions and all their products. They avoid those synthetic fragrances and the chemicals. And that handmade craftsmanship really, really shows. And also, you can even customize the options you're getting there. You can go ahead and pick and choose the ingredients you want to suit your preferences, suit your skin type. And I don't think this needs to be said. These are not products that are tested on animals. These are people who are really forward-thinking. They've got a great product. They're thinking not just about your health. They're thinking about the health of the environment and the world around them. And it's really, really great. There's so many benefits to choosing a natural soap. And Cheeky Maiden is bringing it. They're bringing it, contributing to a healthier environment, supporting ethical practices. It's so cool. Go ahead right now, visit www.cheekymaidensoap.com. Use the code BEAUTIFUL15. You'll get 15% off your next order. That's cheekymaidensoap.com. The code is BEAUTIFUL15, especially if you got someone in your life that you know has an environmental focus and that you think might, you're going, what should I get them as a gift for the holidays? This would be perfect. Go pick out some products at cheekymaidensoap.com. Use the code BEAUTIFUL15. Get 15% off that order. That's it, everybody. That's all the ads. Now, let's finish off the phone call.
Yeah, I don't know what that nun was doing, but hearsay is, you know, that there are people who believe in this stuff and are plugging into this stuff in a lot of different ways. So it's very interesting. Everybody's different.
I really love that perspective on it. Thinking about how these things all cross over. And thinking back, you know, it's very famously known that a lot of the calendar of Christian holidays was adjusted and presented because, you know, the very uneducated version of it that I know is that you'd just, you know, the Catholic Church would spread to an area with a lot of Celtic religion still present or Norse religion still present. People would go, listen, we like what you're selling, but we don't want to give up this big solstice festival. And they'd go, well, all right, that's All Saints Day. We'll call that All Saints. We'll have a Catholic thing and you can celebrate that instead. And you still get to do all the stuff you liked, you know, like Christmas, I believe, is placed around where it is. Not necessarily because Jesus was actually born on December 25th. There's a lot of debate about it, but maybe because there were a lot of other types of festivals that Germanic tribes were practicing around then. And all of these things were molded onto each other in order to spread them and accelerate them and co-opt them. And then, they changed a lot of the folk religions, but they did not die. As much as people maybe assumed they did along the way.
And then as an academic, I'm really not supposed to, I'm supposed to be super logical, but there's also the inverse argument too, which is that especially like things like All Saints Day, maybe there just is inherently a opening of the veil that happens during that time. And so Catholics noticed it and created a system around it. You know, there could be like natural energetic reasons why, you know, there might be that these different religions had rituals emerge at the same time because there is truly some sort of current, some sort of spiritual current running through all of us that makes us repeat the same things over and over again, different places. And I think it's a little bit of both personally, but like, especially with All Saints Day. Like, I do think, like, I identify as a, like, medium. And so, like, most mediums I talk to, and I get that I'm just throwing something casually in there again, but most mediums I talk to, like, do notice that the veil is really thin during the time of All Saints Day and Halloween and All Hallows Eve and all of that. So perhaps these traditions arose around, like, a geo-spiritual fact.
Who's to say? Now, I do also have to ask this. Before you had said, and I believe you said it theoretically, that sometimes there might be a visible ceremony. Sometimes, I believe your quote was, it might just be a gay guy in a t-shirt, I believe.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I got involved in the religion too. I'm glad you picked up on that. Yeah. Yeah, there's like a lot of LGBT people in the religion. For a variety of reasons. And like, again, that's another one where it's like, is it because LGBT people have magical powers or like are some, for some reason, like better suited to being traditional healers? Or is it because gay people are excluded from other religions and find this one? And I think it's a little bit of both again, but because it's another fact you see traditional healers taking, you know, queer people becoming traditional healers in a lot of religions or in a lot of locations. And so, yeah, that was another reason why I got involved was like, there are so many queer people. And that witch that I told you about that like kind of opened my eyes, just, she just, all she said was a few things that just made me aware that this existed. But she was, you know, she was a transgender woman and I was a gay man. And I was like, you know, that was a big part of her cell, sort of, was like, oh yeah, all of these people, there's just a bunch of gay guys. And that's like a joke among us. Like, it's a very gay community. I'll say there's a lot of gay people in our community is what I should say.
I do love that. I recently, and I am not shocked at all. And in many ways I sit here and I go, how did it not occur to me? I recently found out that there's a whole huge subset of gay X-Men fans going back many years, and the X-Men comics I grew up with.
I'm one of those.
Do you listen to Cerebro, my favorite podcast? He has a 7-hour podcast on Juggernaut. It's brilliant. You'd love it. It talks a lot about Hindu mythology, also says that part of Juggernaut's rage is because apparently it's very hard to be a tall bottom, which I did not know. I did not know, but apparently he posits that part of Juggernaut's anger is that he's a tall bottom, which is, it's so funny to hear
it
someone
sounds like
that.
He's projecting, but I really like it.
Point being, to hear that there are what might be viewed as folk religions, although I want to be careful with that phrase, because like I said, that's a colonist perspective, right? That's a way to say this is something to be studied and compartmentalized as antiquated when it's not, when it's always been there. But what might be viewed as that are also embraced in the queer community. Really fascinating. I do have to imagine, and we only have 9 minutes left, so I can't imagine this conversation, but you mentioned you grew up evangelical. How does your evangelical family feel about the fact that you grew up to be a gay Santeria priest? Santero, I believe, is the term?
Yeah, it's been a series of disappointments, but they've learned to deal with it. I always jokingly say, like, I came out as, what did I come out as first? A Democrat, and then I came out as an atheist, and then I came out as an anarchist, and then I came out as, at some point, gay. But yeah, I then kind of swung back and was just sort of an agnostic, like liberal for a while. And so recently having to come out to them again was weird. And they, different family members took it differently, but I definitely had like at least one family member call a Catholic priest and have them like, which is actually there is a Catholic side of the family. They were the ones that sent a priest to splash holy water all over. But yeah, I think at this point people are just not expecting me to adhere. So I don't know. It's a topic I dance around a lot with family.
I imagine that it hasn't been easy. And I'll also say on some level, and I say this fully in support, it also does put a giant smile on my face in the best way. In the best way. Not that I want tension with your family, and not that I enjoy the idea of them being stressed by anything. I don't know them, but the idea that your self-actualization and insistence on finding your own path to walk and walking it is what's creating that dissonance, that puts a smile on my face, and I'm very happy to hear it.
Yeah, that was something I had to deal with the last year, was realizing that my dad specifically, like, that's what he was reacting to more than anything, that he was reacting to a lack of being able to control me and my the outcome of my life. And he has his own issues, and that's why he had that reaction. It has, and I think it's allowed me to realize that, like, and I'm not placing this on Christians, but I'm placing it on anybody who gets really fundamentalist and really needs to make other people believe what they believe, is that I think it really might, at least in this instance, I was like, oh, this person, independent of a religion, would have control issues. And so I've actually had conversations with friends about that, where they say, like, well, Christians are like this. And I'm like, no, those people would be like that no matter what religion they were in. They would, that's them. That has nothing to do with their religion. I know lots of Christians that you wouldn't even know are Christian. One of my best friends is Christian, and I'm constantly telling her, like, you should go to church because it makes you feel better, you know, and she is supportive of what I do. And that's been a very easy conversation. So when it's been a growing process to realize people are just resistant to, I like that you said that. And self-actualization is really important, and it's difficult, and it hurts sometimes, but
and it's
you
lonely.
Cry your way through it.
And it's lonely. And that's why I know that it's easy to kind of maybe to equate your religion having a strong queer presence with the X-Men having a strong queer fan base that's really, really become vocal in recent years. On some level, it's silly, and I hope it didn't come across as disrespectful, but the idea that
common.
And the idea that the idea that there are corners of the world where any of us who feel unsafe can find solidarity with others who feel unsafe, and that when the number hits a tipping point of enough unsafe people finding safe harbor in each other, you actually create safety.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful. It's really beautiful.
Yeah, and I think everybody needs a sense of power and agency, and I think that's why people are drawn to this tradition or other traditions. I think that's why we see this like thing of like queer people, and specifically queer people being attracted to like things that are about diversity. Like X-Men and this are both about diversity and power. Like there's a bunch of different gods and they have different powers, and you can absorb some of that power, or you can model your behavior in such a way. It's all about self-actualization, but it's Santeria and having these like rituals and stuff. It gives women and queer people, a lot of women, a lot of queer people, not that there aren't men and straight men in the religion, but there's a lot of disenfranchised people that are drawn to it because on the facade, on the outside, they might initially be like, this will give me some sort of power or agency. It doesn't. It gives you more, it's more transformational, but it makes sense that these traditions are folk traditions. They're run by the people. That's why they exist. They exist because there's people without power, and those people are scrambling for power, and they can't do so in the light. They can't do so in an executive boardroom. They do so in their prayer closets. And that's just like what it is.
Well, it's so interesting too, because when you said people are under the presumption that things can give you power and they can't, I go, but what they can give you is community. And
yeah,
the older I get, the more I realize that any time in my life that I have felt some sense of self-empowerment, it's because I wound up in a situation that had a strong and healthy sense of community. And that in the times that I don't have that, I feel very lonely. And you start to think of the power brokers and the people who attempt to control, whether that's more controlling forms of religion, which it sounds like you might have grown up in one, or whether it's government control. You start to realize what one of the main tactics is they isolate people and make them, paint them as freaks or abnormal or evil. And you know, I don't really get up on a soapbox too often, but I sit here and I go, I don't understand what it's like to transition. I don't understand it. And a lot of people in their 40s and 50s right now have real strong opinions on it. But what I do understand is this, is that it's scary and lonely, and you are made to feel scared and alone in it, and you are made to feel judged for which bathroom you use, and the suicide rates in that community are horrific.
Yeah.
And that if you can isolate people and make them feel alone, that you can maybe convince them to go away. But if people realize that they're not alone and they're not freaks and they're not evil, they're just following their instincts to a place of happiness, they find others along the way. Well, that is power. So can a religious ceremony give you power? I don't know. Some people think yes. I'm not sold on it, but can it bring you together with other people who believe in you and don't judge you and allow you to take a breath and really proclaim who you are? It can certainly do that. And in that way, it's as powerful as whatever the ceremony promised.
Yeah. Yeah, it is at the end of the day all about community, and that's what ritual is about. And that's why it's very important to us that all of these things happen in a communal context. And that's why there is so much of an emphasis on food. There's a lot of books about food and our religion because it's such a big part of it. And it's because it is the most sort of personal, one of the most personal things you can do, but you almost always do it in a social context, and breaking bread with people is so, like, I don't know. It's just so fundamental to human existence. It makes sense that we would ritualize it and come together. They're the same thing. I don't know.
I love it.
I see community and religion is increasingly the same thing.
I love it. Our time is up. And for the people on the free feed, we shall end there. You've said from the start you weren't trying to be a spokesperson or represent the entirety of this religion, but I think you did a fantastic job of telling us your journey and how you connect with it. And I can't thank you enough. Can't thank you enough.
Thank you.
And are you cool staying on the line for five random questions? And I'm so excited for this because part of the whole point of the five questions thing is we get to learn five things about you that have nothing to do with Santeria. And isn't that a treat as well?
I love that. Yeah.
All right. Well, so many thanks to you. A goodbye to everybody who's been listening for free. You can join Beautiful Anonymous Plus if you want to hear the rest. And for everybody who's on Plus, it's just going to keep continuing. Caller, that was really fascinating. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you.
Caller, I can't thank you enough. What a cool conversation. It went in a bunch of directions that I hoped it would have, and then it went in a whole bunch more that I never anticipated it could have. I thank you for all of them, and I thank all of you for listening, especially everybody who signed up for Beautiful Anonymous Plus over at beautifulanonymous.com. I have to thank our producer, the High Priestess of Beautiful Anonymous, Andrea Quinn. Our theme song is, of course, by Shell Shag. Go to chrisgeth.com if you want to know more about me. And if you have a story and you want to get it on the show and you feel like maybe our production schedule doesn't work for you timing-wise, especially if you feel like you have a voice that's not represented on the show, we want this to be a platform for all kinds of people. You can leave us a pitch by calling our voicemail line at 973-306-4676. That's 973-306-4676. If you want to be alerted to when we are recording, you can follow me on Twitter at Chris Gethard. You can join our Facebook group, Beautiful Anonymous, the community. And we are now on Instagram at Beautiful Anonymous Pod. Thanks, everybody. This week on Beautiful Anonymous Plus, here's some of what you'll get from the five questions. And the first question the number generator has given us is question 75. What reality show would you pick to be on?
Oh, my gosh. I keep thinking about going on Survivor, and I hate it because it feels... I don't know why that's funny to me. I don't think I want to be out in the woods, and I just think it'd be fun.
How do you think you would do at Survivor?
I always go back and forth. I think I would blow up my spot really early on, maybe. I do have, like, a really strong drive towards honesty. I'm in recovery, so, like, lying is something that we're not supposed to do. Like, it's supposed to be really bad for your brain if you struggled with, like, the miserly selfhood that addiction brings on. So, yeah, like, I might, like, try to be too honest. Or the old me that has hidden so many things as a gay person and as a drunk would allow me to really be shifty and lie to people's faces. And yeah, I think I'd be early out or like top five.
Don't forget to sign up for Beautiful Anonymous Plus at beautifulanonymous.com.